Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started.
This is episode 27 of Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. And today, I've got the king of hashtag real talk himself, Mr. Carlos Gil. Carlos, please do me a favor and introduce yourself to everybody that's listening.
Hey, what's going on, Jeff and audience out there? Thank you so much for having me on the show. It is a pleasure. My name is Carlos Gil, and like Jeff said, I'm all about the hashtag real talk. I've been in the social media game for about 8 years now, led social media and digital marketing for a few different brands in addition to having my own startup, and I'm excited to be here and looking forward to talking social with you for the next half hour or so.
Word. So, Carlos, a lot of people know you online. You have a pretty strong following online, and you're one of those people that when something new comes out, you absolutely jump on it. In fact, well before, in almost every scenario, well before I ever even come close to jumping onto something. So a couple things that I want to, dive into here because obviously we're connected on pretty much every platform and I watch what you do. I'd say the first and foremost is, what is it about you that makes you this kind of an early adopter, willing to try all these different things? And, have you found that it's benefited you to get on these things so early?
Well, Jeff, I think it really goes back down to how social has helped me evolve as a professional, right? And for those that don't know my story of how I got into social media and how I've built up the following community that I have, I'll go ahead and just take a couple minutes to go ahead and dive into that. So I actually started my career as a banker, and I worked in banking for the first 6 years of my career. And I was not on social media other than MySpace, back in the day. And right around the end of 2008, I lost my job in the banking industry. I was out of work. It was right during the recession. There was no one hiring in the financial services industry at the time. And my wife happened to be 8 months pregnant. And with the situation as dire as it was, I turned to LinkedIn the day that I lost my job. And just by using LinkedIn and networking and doing what most of us do today, again, this is 2008 when LinkedIn was still very much at the ground level, I really used social media as a way to rebrand myself. And I found that by using social media and really building community, again, doing this through LinkedIn, that really became the basis and the foundation for the networking that I do today, almost 8 years later. So when I go out and I use a Snapchat or Instagram or Meerkat, I'm to the point where I'm not necessarily building or starting from ground zero. I'm just really taking the community that I've built, and granted, it continues to grow, through going to conferences and meeting folks like yourself and doing Twitter chats and really being out there. The community continues to grow, on an ongoing basis. But again, it's really leveraging these mediums to interact and engage with people at the end of the day. And I think more folks should really look at the platforms not so much as social networks, but really social utilities, and use these utilities as ways to go ahead and expand their reach and just really make themselves more marketable and personable at the end of the day.
So how long did it take you, like 2008, early days of LinkedIn? It's sort of thing that, people were saying, oh, this will probably be big. It's a professional social network. You used it out of necessity at that point, not really looking at it proactively prior to that. But faced with the prospect of being out of work and having a kid on the way, you decided, let me look into this. How long did it take you, and what was that process like before there were any really best practices to figure out how you can meet and connect with the right type of people to move your career in a new direction? How long did that take back then? And what did you use as a resource to even know what you were doing? Or was it all trial and error?
It was all trial and error. Back then there weren't as many articles and blogs as you see today, in terms of knowledge. It just really wasn't out there. And very quickly, once I joined LinkedIn, I saw this as a resource not only to connect and engage and build my brand, but to also create a brand. And what I did was I created my own company, called it Jobs Direct USA. And within 3 days of losing my job and within that same 72-hour period of being on LinkedIn, I really became inspired to do something to help people that were out of work as well. So from LinkedIn, I then joined Twitter. From Twitter, I joined Facebook. And next thing you know, I'm using these networks, I'm leveraging these networks not only to promote and grow a new business, but the people that I was meeting on LinkedIn, I was carrying those conversations over onto these other mediums as well.
Got it. Got it. So and I'd imagine that it's sort of that spirit that got you out of the jam back then that leads you to be the guy who's on Meerkat before others, on Periscope before others, who has a Beam account, I'm sure, and is really just trying things before other people. You know, how do you approach these new networks? Because, you know, what I see is sort of unbridled enthusiasm out of you. And sometimes it even looks like, Carlos, chill the fuck out, man. You know, you're really taking this, you know, as if it's the next thing, next best thing since sliced bread. But it has worked out for you in some cases. How are you looking at these things? And how do you have that sort of overwhelming enthusiasm for these things right out of the gate?
Yeah, you know what? In full disclosure, I am not trying to be Gary Vaynerchuk, right? I'm not trying to be that guy that's using these platforms to then write the next book or write the next blog post on how to use Periscope or how to use Beam or any of these apps. At the end of the day, you know, I'm really an evangelist and proponent for using social media for social networking. And I like to think of myself very much as that pinch hitter, that relief pitcher, that if your brand or, you know, whether personal or corporate is really looking for some insight and knowledge, I'm the guy that's going to be able to tell you, this is how you can use it as an individual. This is how you can use it as a corporate entity or as a brand out there that's looking to use these technologies for marketing purposes. You know, but again, you know, it goes back to what I said before. It's trial and error, right? In order to know something works, you have to use it. And let's just take Snapchat for an example. I'm totally hooked on Snapchat right now.
You're kidding.
Snapchat, as you see my daily snaps, has actually become my favorite social network out there. And let me explain this for a second. It's the simplicity, but yet Snapchat goes back to the core of what social media is all about, which is being sociable. And the fact that I can take out my phone, I can record content 10 seconds at a time, and at the end of each day, whether you're laying in bed or you're sitting on the toilet, you can see this content as a perfectly curated story of my day or people that you follow. And again, that's why I like it as much as I do and why I engage on Snapchat as much as I do, because you're actually creating content that is very personable. It's meant to be engaging. And let's face it, at the end of the day, it's not what Facebook has become, right? I think we can agree that Facebook has become the soap opera of social media. It's where people go to sit on their soapbox, to rant, to talk about either everything that's going right and great in their life or everything that's going really shitty and you know, not so great in their life. Snapchat, I think, is still where people are going. They're discovering it. They're having fun. And they're just creating content. And again, to my earlier point, that's what social media is about, man. It's about being sociable.
So a couple of things about that. I think, you know, so for one, for those that don't already follow you, it's Carlos Gil, right? On Snapchat, just all one word, Carlos Gil.
It is the Carlos Gil.
The Carlos Gil. So for any of you out there that are not following Carlos, you can follow him at the Carlos Gil. But what I've noticed is that you post a lot on Snapchat, more than a lot of people in my network. And I'm wondering, because I'm really more of a voyeur on Snapchat, I'm really more of a contributor in other places, how has that worked out for you in terms of relationship building, really generating a sort of meaningful results for either, you know, opportunities for to create revenue or to, you know, have speaking opportunities or anything? How has Snapchat contributed to your success professionally?
You know, I don't know if it's necessarily contributed to my success professionally. I'd say
you just like it and it's fun.
What it's done is it's humanized my brand, right? So, you know, the brand of Carlos Gil, it's really humanized me. And I say that because the first about 3 or 4 years that I was in the social media game, and again, I was pretty young in my career. I was starting up a business and trying to make it like anyone else. So this is before I went to go work for brands to do this for a living. All you would see from me, it was just one-sided. It was the guy that was always providing thought leadership. I used to go on TV quite a bit. I would do segments back then, but you really didn't have a chance to peek behind the curtain to get to know me, the individual. So fast forward to today, 2015, I'm very much involved not only with Snapchat, but with YouTube. I'm looking to use these mediums to kind of break the mold of social media thought leader, or social media professional, and just be Carlos. You know, and I think a lot of us should think that way, is just be Jeff, just be yourself. You know, use these mediums and use them to network and engage and you know, obviously grow your business. But at the end of the day, people want to be inspired by you, the individual. And what we see too much of, or at least what I see too much of nowadays, is people don't know how to turn off that switch. It's work, work, work all the time. At night, Saturdays, Sundays, you name it. And at the end of the day, dude, you know, I want to be inspired and engaged by who you are as Jeff Gibbard, the person who I can hang out with at a conference and have a Moscow mule. I don't necessarily want to follow Jeff Gibbard, the entrepreneur, 24/7, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's brand is going to be different. And just in my own, I guess, my own self-assessment of my brand or me as a person, how I present myself online, I think there's very little distinction between Jeff Gibbard, the entrepreneur, and Jeff Gibbard, the human being, because I just think I just post whatever the hell I want. It's kind of a mishmash everywhere. You know, that being said, I think how should I put this? How do I want to phrase this, let's say? I feel like my question for you is this. Do you think that there's, with as much as you share, do you ever feel as a professional in the social media world that sometimes you're actually just missing the moment by posting it as content, as potentially not just enjoying the concert or enjoying being with the person that you're with, but making it into, oh, but also it's the people that sit at their meals and Instagram every meal. And I do that a lot, mind you. But I'm just saying, what's your take on that, of the sort of over-socialification of our lives?
You know, I think that, you know, whether you want to pin it on the millennials or you just want to kind of put it on the generation of technology today, but, you know, there is a serious case of FOMO that technology has created. And I think it really works both ways. You know, we go to the conference nowadays, you know, and I know you've been to several, I've been to several, and we've been to some of them together, in fact. And what's everyone doing at dinner, right? They're all on their phone. You get a bunch of social media professionals at a table together. No one's really talking. No one's engaging. They're all at their phone, they're taking selfies, they want to share with the world. And then how that kind of carries out and resonates into the world is we've become the ADD generation. We're constantly focused on these gadgets, on these apps. And look, I am just as guilty as the next person of doing it. And my wife will be the first person to just grab my phone when we're at dinner and say, hey, look, you know, it's time for you to spend with your family and your kids and be focused on what's happening in the moment, to your point. You know, I think, again, you know, Snapchat is kind of a blessing and a curse, right? It's a great medium to tell that story of what you're doing in the moment, what you're doing throughout your day. At the same time, you also miss out on that moment. And, you know, it's unfortunate to even admit it, but when I look back on the last, heck, 6 or 7 years of my life, I've lived a lot of those experiences directly through, you know, a 3-inch screen on an iPhone. Which sucks. But, you know, again, I think that's, as professionals, what we kind of wrestle with is, at what point do you turn it off? And can you turn it off? Because as you know, your brand lives 24/7. And even when you go to sleep, your brand still lives out there. So, you know, I could kind of ask you, you know, Jeff, at what point do you think there is that balance?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because I think it's different for everybody about what they're comfortable with, because, you know, you and I both being in the industry, we're both very comfortable with our phones being attached to our hip. But, you know, I'm sure both you and I know people who their phone is in their bag sometimes and it doesn't come out for hours, and they check their text messages and they're 2 to 3 hours on a response. I tend to be very, very quick on the response for most things because that's my behavior. And I think given the wide range of behaviors, maybe the balance is less of an ideal that we all strive for, but something that each of us individually should strive for. You know, that being said, I think when we look at this, there is, you mentioned FOMO. I think there is a desire now that there's this ability to create an audience if you'd like to, if you choose to use these tools to build an audience. There is this sort of, and I've heard you use the term before, it's something I've been using for a while, but the term micro celebrity, that, you know, if you can build an audience and you become this sort of micro celebrity in your particular niche, that there becomes now this imperative to create ever more content. So it becomes this sort of self-promotional snake eating its own tail where you can't escape it, really. It's just a constant wheel. And in the midst of that, where we have people that are competing for this attention and becoming noisier and noisier, we've got brands now entering the fray, and they have the ability to pay for visibility. So as we talk, you know, you mentioned about humanizing the brand and humanizing people. What chance does the average person, which is really the fundamental foundation of social, is the average common person, it's the flattening effect, what chance do they have amidst the people that are micro celebrities that are constantly making noise and self-promoting, and the brands that have now the ability to pay to play and budgets to create content?
Well, I think the micro celebrity, they should be working directly with the brands. And, you know, not all of them are self-promotional. I think, you know, your question's an interesting one, and I'm probably going to take it in a different direction from what you just asked, because you've got brands out there that they're trying to penetrate Snapchat. They're trying to get into Meerkat. They don't necessarily want to take a risk and go all in on these platforms. And let's just take Snapchat, for example. It costs brands a lot of money to have a sponsored filter on the platform. I believe it's upwards to $2 million a day. But yet you've got people like a good friend of mine, Ben Phillips, at Ben Figo on Snapchat. I don't drive by a Taco Bell and not think about Ben Phillips. And Ben Phillips has become, from my point of view, a micro celebrity within Snapchat, where if I was Taco Bell, I would be reaching out to this guy and I would do everything I can to go ahead and work with him, because people are listening to him. He's influential. He has people like me on your podcast that are talking about Taco Bell when otherwise they wouldn't, because of Ben Phillips or Vincenzo Landino, who's doing work with Applebee's and doing, you know, really a kick-ass job through Meerkat and Periscope. You know, I could go on and on, because, you know, there's those folks out there that are doing a good job. So again, I think the brands, what they should be doing is they should be really seeing who's making the most noise, whether you want to call it influence, reach, micro celebrity, who's making the noise on these platforms, who's talking about them, and how can they make that connection between the brand, the individual, and the platform.
But, you know, again, to come back to the little guy, which is ultimately who in social I'm most concerned with and who I'm constantly looking out for, because I think that was what was exciting to me when I first thought about social media, was the flattening effect of it. And if you look at these micro celebrities that make the noise and the idea that brands could approach them to promote and hawk their product, I mean, aren't we bastardizing something that could have been beautiful? And we've got these little guys who are going to be ignored because maybe their clout score isn't high enough, or they don't have enough Twitter followers, or their influence on Facebook isn't enough, or they've locked down all their privacy settings. So aren't we creating a situation in which, you know, the loudest person is the one that wins, rather than maybe the one that's most meaningful, or the one that's providing the most value, or that's putting the most thought into it? I mean, I've always said, if you want to be a thought leader, the first thing you have to do is think. And I think what most people put out there is that they want to be a thought leader, and they think they just have to be the loudest and put out the most stuff.
I think that when you put it into that context, Jeff, you know, you're setting yourself up for failure. I can tell you from working at two consumer brands, being Winn-Dixie and Save-A-Lot, when I worked at those brands, we would do consumer outreach marketing, and it was around advocates. And we didn't call them micro celebrities. They weren't anything. They weren't known as anything other than engaged advocates or engaged customers. And we would utilize social listening tools to actually see who was talking about the brand over and over again. So when we would have a promotion roll around, or for example, if it was Thanksgiving, we would send this person a few gift cards to go ahead and do what they would normally do, which is buy our product and go ahead and talk about it on social media or write about it on their blog. Again, very little to no compensation other than just enough to be able to purchase product. I think when brands start crossing the line and they really look at individuals as celebrities, it does, to your point, to a degree, ruin the authenticity of social media. And I'll give you a good example. I am a huge advocate and proponent for the brand Cheesecake Factory. I love eating there. I never have a bad experience. I'll constantly go there, and I will tweet about them to my community and take pictures and let everyone know how much I love Cheesecake Factory with no expectation of anything in return. I think when then brands start paying for that reach, you're not going to get that same level of authentic engagement. And again, that is where brands really need to strike the balance.
Okay. I can see that. The thing that I just want to, you know, I just want to keep coming back to it though, is what about the little guys? You know, I mean, we can say, yeah, you can use listening tools and you can find the people talking and you can find the people that are well connected or that are influential. But I think one of the things about social that to me is so exciting is that, you know, similar to when you lost your job and you got a LinkedIn account out of nowhere, you had absolutely no clout at that point. You were, in effect, nobody to the world of social media because you were a brand new person. And I think now that we've come as far as we have from that time, and we're in 2015 and we have all of these platforms, what happens to the person who's wronged by a business or who needs help and they go online and they're a nobody? Maybe they don't know how to use Twitter yet and they're just an egg. What happens to them, and how do we make the social world a little bit more equitable so that it's not just focusing on the Kim Kardashians of the world and the people whose, you know, Twitter followers are in the thousands, 10,000s, or 100,000s?
Yep.
Like, how do we get United and American Airlines and all the airlines to take a bigger, more customer-centric stance for everybody, not just those who have the potential, according to what they see, to ruin their reputation?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, I think, Jeff, it goes back down to brand culture, and that's something that needs to be built internally, you know, within your CMO, within your CEO. You know, unfortunately, many C-level executives still are not using these resources. They're not on these mediums, and marketing teams are still wrestling internally to even show the value of what digital and social does. So, you know, you said a couple times now the little guy. I don't believe that there's such thing as the little guy. I think nowadays, if you give someone an iPhone and a Twitter account, they're an influencer, regardless if they have 100 followers, 1,000, or 100,000. Everyone's an influencer. Everyone's influential within their own circles. And they might not necessarily have a large reach or following on social media, but who's to say that person's not influential in their own community? So the same laws and same tactics that apply online, I believe, apply offline as well. And shame on a brand if they're ignoring anyone who's trying to engage with them online, because as you and I know, once content is out there in the open, everyone sees it. And if you choose who you're going to engage with, if you choose who you are going to ignore or who you're not going to ignore, then ultimately that falls on the hands of your community manager and your leadership internally.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Cultural is probably the number one area that can make or break. It's been said, culture eats strategy for lunch. But I want to shift gears real quick because, you know, I know that you're a busy dude and we have limited time together. And there's a couple things I wanted to ask you about that, you know, we've never really gotten the chance to shoot the shit about when we've been at conferences together. But I want to talk to you a little bit about what your social media day looks like. And I mean, I see part of it. Because, you know, I check in on my social sites and everything, but you've been able to amass a pretty substantial audience on Twitter, over 50,000 people. You know, you have your Carlos Gil TV, you have your Snapchat. How do you go about creating as much content as you do and talking with as many people as you do online? And then at the same time, how do I put this? Make money and have a job, because you spend, you have so much that goes out there and you do so much. I think a lot of people would look at what you do and say, well, that's just simply not realistic for someone like me. And when does he have time to X, Y, and Z? You know, you're kind of a unique scenario in the way that you've been able to build this. So take us through the day of what your day looks like so that anybody listening has some sense of whether or not you're even living the same kind of a lifestyle as they are at work.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, I go to sleep for a few hours every night.
Well, that's novel. That's an interesting idea.
But no, I wake up in the morning and no joke, man, the first thing I grab is my iPhone, and I will lay in bed for the first few minutes before I get up and hop in the shower, and I'll read my tweets. I literally will start on Twitter. I will go to Facebook. I will check my LinkedIn, my Instagram, my Snapchat. So by the time my feet ever hit the ground, I'm already plugged in. And, you know, living here on the West Coast has been interesting because, you know, everyone, you know, well, not everyone, but, you know, a big part of my network that I'm connected to, they're on the East Coast. So they're getting their day started a lot sooner than I. So there's always a lot of content that I have to catch up on. Then I go to work, you know, here living in the Bay Area, I take a train into the office. So that gives me about an hour to go ahead and read Mashable and Fast Company and catch up with people through tweets or DMs or text messages. So if you're catching my drift to this point, I'm always connected. I'm always on my iPhone is always within, you know, an arm's reach of wherever I'm at, and I'm constantly checking these apps to see, you know, who's out there engaging with me or what conversations should I be engaging in. And then at that point, when I come into work, it's all work. You know, so that's the fine line there, right? You know, I am a professional. I do have a day job. I do get paid a salary to work for a company, and I spend about 8 to 9 hours of my day doing everything from sitting in meetings to developing strategy to, you know, creating content, listening to what people are saying on the various social channels, to, again, meeting with stakeholders internally to ensure that their needs are being met. So during that time, there's content that's going out on my various social accounts. And, yeah, I use different tools. I use Buffer as a tool and Hootsuite as another to get content out. So if I see something that I really like and I want to share it, I'll typically schedule that out. That way, while I'm at work, there's content that's going out. And then, you know, again, I'll check my phone from one meeting to another, at lunch. I'm constantly seeing who is engaging with me. That's something that's very, very important and near and dear to me. Because unfortunately, Jeff, as you know, you've got a lot of people out there, whether you want to call them an influencer or just someone that's, you know, really connected, you've got a lot of people out there that don't engage. And, you know, I don't want to be one of those individuals. So I want to be able to respond to someone as quick as possible. You know, even if I'm at work, you know, there is downtime, there's opportunities to do that. And then by the time I leave work, again, I get back on a train. I'm doing some more engaging online. Typically, I'll participate in a Twitter chat or two. And then I'll get home. And, you know, I've got a wife and kids. And when I go home, I disconnect from being Carlos, the social media persona, to Carlos, the dad, Carlos, the husband. And, you know, I devote my family the time that they deserve. And then once they go to sleep, it's right back on the grind for at least an hour or two. So I guess what I'm trying to let others know out there is that, you know, I'm really passionate about the space. Social media has really helped me define and develop a career path that I never knew existed. And quite frankly, it would have never been possible if I would have adopted it at the time that I did. And, you know, with that said, and because I am so passionate about it, it's very hard for me to disconnect. And it's not necessarily the best thing because, again, you know, there's times where my wife and kids or friends, they want to be able to have my undivided attention, and they can't always because I'm constantly plugged in. And, you know, again, it's just one of those things, Jeff, that I do it because I really care about people. You know, I'm trying to build a legacy while I have my day job. At the end of the day, I want to be remembered for something. I want to be really remembered as that guy that, you know, tried to help people find their next job or really inspired or motivated them. And, you know, was really just a friend. And, you know, Brian Fanzo has his saying, like, I've got real talk. He has show you care. And I think that's really what it comes down to, man. You've got a lot of assholes out there that are self-promoting. That's all about me. In my case, it's all about we and how many people I can really impact and influence in the process.
All fair points, man. All fair points. You know, amidst all the things that you're doing and all the work that you do at your job and everything, how do you stay current on what's happening? I mean, aside from the fact that you're checking Twitter and Facebook and everything, you know, are there any blogs or podcasts or sources of information, books that you, you know, tend to gravitate toward or authors? You know, how much time do you spend keeping yourself up to date? Because one of the things that I think, you know, I hear a lot of with our clients and prospects is, you know, who has the time to keep up with all this stuff? And if you look at someone like yourself or myself or others that we are peers of ours, you know, we're so busy actually doing the work and then instructing others to do the work that sometimes it can be very hard to keep up with what's happening. Where do you go to stay informed outside of just what you see serendipitously on social?
So I think, you know, that's a good point, Jeff. That's the difference between someone who's a true professional in the space and someone that's just trying to fake it until they make it, right? You know, as a professional, I think it's our job to really be in touch with not only the latest technologies, but how they're being used, whether by people or by brands. You know, again, my background before coming to work in B2B and in tech was in B2C and consumer marketing. And I subscribe to socialmedia.org. It's a free newsletter. They're an organization as well, but, you know, they have a free newsletter. It goes out every week that has different brand campaigns and how brands are effectively using things like Snapchat and how innovative brands are using the Meerkat and Periscope. So, you know, that for me is a great resource just to kind of get some tidbits on how brands, some of the larger brands out there, are effectively using social. You know, obviously Fast Company and Mashable, these are sites that I also get updates from on a daily basis through email. But then honestly, man, and this might sound cliche, I just go on my newsfeed, dude. You know, I'll go on my Facebook newsfeed, I'll go on LinkedIn, on Pulse, and then on Twitter, and I'll see what people are talking about. And, you know, I think the best way to really show people that you care is to engage with their content, to retweet it. And, you know, there's really no science to it other than that.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. What sort of things are you interested in right now in the social space? I mean, we've talked a lot about marketing, but I mean, is your interest solely in marketing? Have you gotten anything, any thoughts out there about social selling, social recruiting, internal collaboration, customer service? I mean, any of those areas, things that you're either studying, advising on, or anything like that?
I'm really interested in just overall the world of digital business, you know, not just social, but digital business in terms of email, website, you know, mobile apps. I tell you, ever since I moved out to the Valley here, I'm really interested in the startup scene. And I've started to meet some folks that are, you know, heavily involved in the startup scene, you know, everyone from VCs to actual entrepreneurs themselves. And, you know, honestly, man, that's a world that's still relatively new to me. But, you know, I'm really interested in learning more about it. I've been doing a lot of research, and I think eventually, you know, you'll probably see me just get involved, you know, maybe as an advisor, as a mentor, and, you know, really see how I can utilize and leverage my expertise specifically for social and digital marketing to help some startups out.
Got it. So that's, you know, some of the stuff that's out there. It's exciting. You know, and you've spoken a little bit about the collaborative economy. I know, you know, I'm a huge fan of Jeremiah Ao Yang's work, and I know that you've recently talked a little bit about that. But what are some of the things that are out there right now that are just completely burning your ass and are pissing you off? I mean, we covered a little bit about the, you know, the self-promotion side of things. But is there anything else out there that you're seeing that is just starting to bother you, or things that you think need to be adjusted, tweaked, or, you know, fundamentally dealt with in order to preserve the future of social?
Yeah, you know, I'd say authenticity. I think those lines are starting to become blurred. And, you know, let me expand on this for a minute. You've got a lot of self-proclaimed thought leaders out there, a lot of folks that, you know, I believe I call it smoke and mirrors. They are portraying themselves to be a lot bigger than what they are. They're out there, you know, tabbing themselves as gurus. And heck, you know, I don't want to name names or even get too specific in the detail, but I get hit up by people almost on a daily basis, you know, trying to sell me their training program. And once I start doing my due diligence, you know, I start to kind of connect the dots and think a lot of these folks out there, they seem to be like snake oil salesmen, you know, so to speak. They are tabbing themselves to be gurus and experts, but yet they've never done anything. And I think that, again, goes back to what's wrong with social media today is, you know, this isn't necessarily about sales or advertising or marketing. You know, social media at the core is about engaging. It's about building relationships. And I think the more that you have these folks that are just prying on the, you know, like you said, the lower man on the totem pole, the more it kind of ruins social. And, you know, I think there's going to be a market correction that eventually happens. I think a lot of these folks by attrition will weed themselves out. I think they will be called out by others and they won't exist. But, you know, again, man, I got to say, it's something that really does bother me.
It's interesting because, you know, this conversation about the gurus and experts and ninjas and all of that has been going on since like 2008. So it's funny that it's still something that kind of is a conversation that continually comes up and everything. And the other funny part about it is just that, you know, the side of social where engagement as a buzzword comes out is actually one of those things that typically is associated with the whole snake oil salesman side of things. And I think the marketing and sales side and the more serious business side of things is actually what I'd love to see more of in that. But at the same time, I would agree with you that I think there's a lot of people out there that have latched onto that social is a possible career path for them when they might otherwise have nothing else. So it's interesting that it's still something that bothers you. I remember you had posted that in one of our Facebook groups that we're both a part of. And it's funny because it still inspires discussion.
Yeah, you know, it's at the end of the day, just do good things for people and people do good things for you. But
that's good advice.
No, definitely. And again, you know, I'm living proof of that. You're living proof of that. We are individuals that are using social media, for the better good of humanity, so to speak. We're using this as a vehicle to educate, inspire, and motivate. And that's what, you know, that's again what I at least want to be remembered for. But when I see that people are making a lot of money by teaching things like social selling or social engagement and really just selling this false hope or false promise, you know, those are the things that I really don't have much tolerance or respect for. And another thing is focusing too much on vanity metrics. And what I mean by that is this is the year 2015. You should not be pounding your chest because as a brand or as an individual, you got X million of impressions, but yet you cannot make the connection with what that did for sales. And that's something that you're still seeing a lot of. You're seeing a lot of these gurus out there that are speaking in layman terms that were from 2008, 2009. It's 2015. At this point, what I want to hear from true thought leaders and gurus out there is, how are you leveraging social for it to actually mean something for either your brand, your small business, or yourself?
So what's your favorite thought leadership platform of choice, or your the one that you choose to use most? I mean, I know you're very active on your YouTube channel. I see you blog here and there on LinkedIn, but what's your number one place where you like to put your thought leadership content, where you've sat down, pondered a concept, and put out something original? Where's your venue of choice?
You know, I'll be frank with you, Jeff. I wish I had more time to blog. I unfortunately don't have as much time on my hands as I wish I did, and probably that's because I Snapchat too much, as you know, and I send too many tweets out. But you know, I participate in Twitter chats as often as I can. I think those are really good mediums to drop what I call knowledge bombs. You know, I'll go into a Twitter chat, there's a topic, whether I'm the featured guest or whether I'm just happen to be in the Twitter chat, I use those as mediums to educate, inspire, and motivate. And also what I do on a daily basis is typically in the morning, I'll throw out a motivational tweet of the day, if you will. And it's basically what's on my mind. It's when I'm the most fresh, I'm hyped up, and I want to share something with the world that really means a lot to me. And I typically do the same thing on Facebook. In terms of where I go to seek that thought leadership, I go on YouTube. And I tell you, I'm a big fan of Gary Vaynerchuk. I have been for many years now. And anytime that I want just a jolt of total kick ass, I will go watch a Gary Vaynerchuk video on YouTube. And I seriously feel like I could rule the world after I see Gary speak for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I'll definitely have to spend some more time watching some of Gary's. So every time I watch Gary, I'm always like, yeah, dude's pretty right on. And it's funny because he kind of was like overexposed for a little bit and then he kind of dipped out and then he came back kind of strong. So yeah, I'm a fan as well. Well, listen, Carlos, we've been on for probably about as much time as you've got. So I want to thank you for coming on to the podcast. You know, I really appreciate you setting aside the time. I know you're a busy dude, and I probably stopped you from posting like at least 15 different Snapchats. So, you know, thanks for setting aside the time for me. Let people know who are listening where they can go to be social with you, where they can learn more about the sort of thought leadership content you're putting out, and, you know, ultimately where they can connect with you and follow you.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked quite a bit about Snapchat, so you can follow me on there at the Carlos Gill. I'm on Twitter at CarlosGill83, and you can definitely hit me up anytime on LinkedIn. Just find me on there as Carlos Gill, and that's Gill, G-I-L with one L.
Cool. I will put that all in the show notes so that people have an easy way to connect with you. Do me a favor, send me that nifty little Snapchat thing that they have so that people can just scan the screen. I know you have one of those, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you'll send that to me. It'll go in the show notes as well. And for all of you out there listening, thank you so much. I appreciate your time, your attention, and that you keep tuning in to listen to me talk with fabulous guests like Carlos Gill, who have come on to drop some knowledge bombs and some hashtag real talk. So, Carlos, thanks again for coming on to the show. And everyone, again, thanks for listening. Be sure to drop by iTunes, give us a rating, tell us how fabulous we are. Jump on Twitter and be sure to tell me how handsome I am. Take care. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed that episode of Conversations. Be sure to go over to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show, what you hate about the show. And we hope you come back for our next episode. Take care.